This episode of the Pain Education Corner is sponsored by the Camella Foundation. The Camella Foundation is committed to relieving pain naturally using osteopathic healing principles. Here at the Camella Foundation, we envision a world where people achieve their maximum potential by being empowered with knowledge and skills to heal themselves and others. This information is to be used for educational purposes only, and not to be construed as medical advice. If you have any questions or concerns, please consult a licensed healthcare professional. Hello, it's Bill, the Knee Pain Guru. Welcome to the Pain Education Podcast brought to you by the Camella Foundation. Today we have a special guest coming to you from Asheville, North Carolina. It's Dr. Chris Boyan.
Boyan, you got it correct, Bill.
Boyan. Today we're going to talk about you are not your pain. So Dr. Chris, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your information today. Tell us, how'd you get here?
Well, I met you through our networking group, and you know, we do see a lot of people with knee pain. I've dealt with a lot of people with knee pain, so I felt it was pertinent to reach out to you. I didn't know what you were doing with your business and the Camella Foundation mm-hmm. and everything like that. And mm-hmm. once I found out, I thought it'd be imperative to join forces with you and get this information out there and share some stories. And you know, as we were speaking earlier, if we can connect just to one person today, impact their life and change it, I think that'd be a successful day for this chapter.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're a chiropractor in the Asheville, North Carolina area?
Yeah, I'm a practicing chiropractor here in North Carolina. I've got a history of dealing with in healthcare for over 20 years. I started out as an athletic trainer, working with high school and college athletes, prevention care of injuries, injury management, rehab, on the field management, and then I graduated to the big leagues of medical device sales. So I was working in orthopedic trauma and spine surgery. You know, I grew up in northern New Jersey in a very blue-collar family. Grew up going to Irish Catholic grammar school, and there was really no excuses for certain things. And my dad was in the military before I was born, and he came home on leave. He felt sick, so they gave him some medicine. On the ride home, he fell asleep, and the car hit a guardrail, and the guardrail went through the motor block and like broke his hip and his arm. And luckily enough for him, he had a paramedic sitting next to him in the car that he was driving home. And it was a very, very cold night. And you know, you get that adrenaline rush when emergencies happen, you hear about moms picking up the Volkswagen off their baby.
Yeah. Well,
this little 5'5" man saved my dad's life by pulling the car seat out of the car and getting him outside of the car. And because it was so cold, the wound that was open coagulated. Otherwise, he would have bled out and died as this man was barefoot to save his life. And growing up as a kid, my dad never had, even though he was a disabled veteran, he never had a handicapped parking. He would jump in and out of his truck, coaching sports teams, just huge scars. So like anytime I had a little nick or a wound, I didn't have a reason for an excuse for things of that nature. So just kept me honest and kept me motivated to be honest, you know, because I had my own birth injury. I was born, they tugged me out with my mom with forceps. Uh-huh. It caused the top bone of my neck to shift so severely out of place, but nobody checked it. And I wound up being my pediatrician's worst case. He was big into research, very well-known man, and I'm very thankful for him. He kept me alive because mm-hmm. there was many rides. I remember being as young as about 5 years old and my mom talking to my dad. He was on a hunting trip telling me I need to come home, and I'm just breathing on the floor. You ever feel like you have shortness of breath? I call it SOB, shortness of breath.
Yeah.
50-pound weight on your chest. And on the ride to the hospital that night, I just thought I was going to be a goner, and you feel like you're breathing through a straw. And this was kind of like a normal occurrence that, you know, I was in and out of the hospital. There's nights that I would be going to his house, getting sick on the floor from the medications and stuff like that. And it was just a terrible experience overall.
And this was when you were a child?
Yeah.
The pediatrician issue?
Yeah, from birth. Just always had these problems. Like I said, and now the hospital taking medications. And when you're 10, you want to play sports, right? And what kid doesn't want to go run around with their friends, but just playing freeze tag with my cousins, I'd have these massive asthma attacks and have to crawl home. But in my heart, I didn't believe them that I couldn't play sports. Like, I knew I could do it. And so my mom finally signed me up to play football. I was very successful at it, played at a high level from day one, but I wheezed my way through, taking the nebulizer treatments at halftime. Always taking a pill or a shot to cover up what's going on. And, you know, I got to be able to play football in college. I was very fortunate, but I just dug such a ditch that my body kind of just shut down, you know? So even though I had no excuse attitude from my dad's injury, not listening to my body or trying to cover up my pain, really hurt me in the long run.
Mm-hmm. So you were with this up to what age? Like your high school, and you're still having a lot of these challenges?
Well, fortunately, everything's kind of resolved now. You know, I was able through my own journey. You know, my life's work is going through my own experience, and that's what's led me to where I am today. You know, when I got into that medical device sales doing ortho trauma, I felt that's I wanted to give back for what was given to my dad, because without the trauma surgeons putting them together, I wouldn't be alive, you know. And I always was fascinated with the spine, because when I did go to college, did you ever lose something you love to do, Bill? Have the ability to do that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? It's kind of crazy. You work your whole life to get somewhere and then you can't do it. And I took a medical leave from my football team and I was just on rock bottom. Then all of a sudden my back started hurting for the first time in my life. And it felt like there was a knife in my back. And somebody, I wish I knew who it was, I'd like to thank them, said, go see the chiropractor. I was like, okay. And then for the first time in my life, somebody took a picture of my spine, and there was this 22-degree curve in my spine. And with a smile on his face, he's like, hey, don't worry about it. We can fix it.
Yeah.
And I was like, listen, buddy, I'm kind of on rock bottom here. Things aren't going so hot. You know, let's see what you got. And literally within 3 weeks, my spine moved 12 degrees. Not only breathed better, my grades in school got better. Never mind the back pain being gone. So that really changed my worldview.
What age was this? Just to give the listeners.
I was 19.
You were 19.
Physical condition, you know, physically, that's what was frustrating in high school. Like, as I got physically stronger, internally, I was feeling weaker. You know, I knew something was off, but I didn't know what it was, what was going on. It was definitely a lack of nerve flow that was affecting my life like that.
And the medical sales, where was that in relationship to the 19? Like that, it was after?
Yeah, so I finished up my undergraduate work in sports medicine, you know, so learning with this chiropractor, when the athletes were coming in, you know, when they sprained an ankle, I was like, did you really sprain your ankle, or did you sprain your ankle because your hips or neck are out, from what I'm learning at this chiropractor, right? So it kind of changed my worldview, and this would, it's kind of going to relate to what we're going to talk about today with sports injuries. You know, I've been around sports injuries for a long time with earning my own
since
10 years old, and then helping others since I was 18 years old up until today, of what goes on with that. So we worked at the high school level in college level for 10 years in New Jersey, a couple of different colleges and high schools, had an amazing experience. And then we got into the sales part of it.
Got it. And where in there did you become a chiropractor? Like, how did that come into play?
In my heart, I was probably always a chiropractor since I got my first adjustment. You know, at that point, I wanted to go to chiropractic school when I finished athletic training school, but I was a knucklehead and had to burn out my desire system. And, you know, it just wasn't the right time. You know, I think I would have done well in it, but I wouldn't have respected it as a lifestyle. It would have more been just a job. Where now, for me and my wife and our family, it's more of a lifestyle for success in life, not just a treatment modality for pain or crisis.
Yeah, I personally, I've had tremendous results with chiropractors in my life. They've saved me numbers of times, from car accidents to getting thrown on my head in judo. And, you know, and there was actually a point in time, I don't think I've ever told this story, When I was in college, I went to the University of Toledo. That was when I was like, oh, what would you like to do? There wasn't any major that intrigued me. And I looked into becoming a chiropractor. However, I don't believe I asked the right people. And I just went down where it was like, okay, this isn't going to work out. But that was actually one of the things that I had of anything in college that I would be interested in doing.
So you felt from your own experience that there was value there, not only for yourself, but for how you could help other people.
Oh yeah. Like it was ridiculous. The first time I went to a chiropractor, I was 16, a back issue myself. And I was absolutely amazed at how significantly better I felt in a short period of time.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. You know, the first high school I worked at was Booten High School in New Jersey. And shout out to those kids and those families. We had a great sports run. We were able to be state champs in two sports with the same group of kids in football and wrestling. And for 2 years, the 3 years I worked there, the 2 years we went to two state championship games in football. We played 22 straight games and nobody missed a start. And
wow. It
was really awesome because my job was preventative. You know, I wasn't out there running, stretching kids or putting ice bags. We did all the work ahead of time. And, you know, I felt the limitation of my scope of practice as an athletic trainer. You technically can't manipulate the spine. You know, you can put some pressures and get a little oscillation going in there, but just that and everything I incorporate with them, you see the results and the impact, and those kids' worldview, like yourself at age 16, gets totally changed.
Sure.
They're not a victim, they're a hero. And
right.
I know that the strength comes from within. I always tell people strength and peace come from within. And
sure.
So does our body. Like, you know, we're kidding ourselves if we think we're designed to be healthy. You and I wouldn't have a job if we were designed to be healthy, right? But
yeah.
What we are to do is designed to heal.
Sure.
But if we don't have a few things going for us, it's very hard to heal. And, you know, I'm one of those people that's attained 10,000 hours in life studies already. And I will tell you, just scratch the surface.
Yeah.
Got to new conversations with people like yourselves and what you're doing with the Camella Foundation. But, you know, with all that medication and everything that I took, the worst part is it just destroyed my gut flora. You know, all those medical steroids and everything, it's terrible for your bones. It's terrible for your digestive enzymes. So I would leave myself like chronically getting bloated and all this stuff. So sometimes covering up our pain with external things can be very dangerous, you know, and it creates more problems than it does good for ourselves. And through that, you know, I spent tens of thousands of dollars going to naturopaths and they all helped, but I would leave there with $3,000 worth of supplements, get stopped at every airport. Sir, why do you have all these potions going on?
Mm-hmm.
And you're drinking Vitamixes and, you know, Slim Fast and juices or, you know, calorie restrictions. And it just gets, you get 10% better. And you're like, is this life? You know, so through my 10,000 hours, I've deduced it down to the three most important things. And I hope everyone can take a moment to write this down. And I think you would agree that nerve flow is number one exercise.
What we're going to do, and so I want the listeners to focus on listening to you. I'm going to have all of this in the show notes, so then they don't have to worry about writing it down. They can get it out of the show notes.
Okay, perfect.
But absolutely. Please share your approach to relieving pain and health.
Yeah, so those three other things, nerve flow, exercise, and water, those are the three things that we've deduced it down to. You know, my approach has changed throughout, as my practice has changed. You know, when you go to athletic training school, day one, you're learning how to modulate pain, get people back on the field safely in the acute situation. But sometimes by modulating their pain, you can create a chronic problem. You know, so if something doesn't heal right just because you can run on it doesn't make it a good situation.
Right.
What I see now as a result from that, you know, if you go to a typical chiropractor, PT, massage therapist, they're all great, especially if you have symptoms. They can get rid of it without a benefit of a doubt. But if you're getting, you know, your neck manipulated and you're getting stim and ice and you're not actually restoring nerve flow or function back to the spine, it's a really bad thing because they'll come in the sixth decade of life after 20 years of chiropractic care with degenerative arthritis. And how do you explain that except that the sensations were dulled? mm-hmm. things weren't healed right. So when we sit down to talk with people in hierarchy of importance, as much as their pain is really important to them, I'm more concerned about getting the function better. Mm-hmm. And I know if I get them to function better, the pain is going to go away on its own. Mm-hmm. And I think when we first talked on the phone the other day, and this has stuck with me my whole life, I think pain's a perception. You know, if you, the worst thing ever happened to you was a bee sting, you would think that that's terrible. But if you blew your knee out 7 times, you would think that bee sting's just a walk in the park, right? And that kind of leads us to today's topic, that you are not your pain. You know, when I was at my sickest point in my health, my Aunt Linda, God bless her soul, fought cancer 3 times, but she gave me a book and it said, "You're not your disease." Mm-hmm. And I read that and it really kind of put things into perspective, because I think when we're in pain, the whole world is just that one thing. Mm-hmm. But when you look at your life, that's like a small piece. Mm-hmm. You could have 8 out of 9 out of 10 things going right. But if you're just focused on the pain, you're going to be in that misery. But if you take a step back and be grateful for all these other things you have, I think it helps give you a different perspective of how to work through the situation that you have. You know, like mm-hmm. working through the injury versus being the injury.
There is a point that you mentioned that I'd like to dig in a little deeper on. And that was, you were saying that if you could run on your leg, you know, something happened, and I'm thinking of an athlete, something happened, and just because you could run on it doesn't mean you should be running on it.
Correct.
Could you make distinctions in there to help the listeners?
Certainly.
Wrap, because I'm having difficulty wrapping my brain around, well, how would I know if I could run on it? Isn't that okay?
Yeah.
It's,
and that's a great thing. So I'll give 2 analogies. One is, like, you can drive a car across country on a flat tire, right? But it might wreck your entire car, even though you got there.
Right.
Right. Okay. And then also, when we think about some of these life-threatening diseases that are out there, like heart disease or cancer, like, what does cancer feel like? You don't know. And heart attack, what does a heart attack feel like until you have one?
Right.
Right. So you have all these underlying things, and 90% of people that come in here that have back pain have an issue in their neck, but the body accepted that as normal a long time ago, and the neck's not functioning. And then acutely, they bend over to brush their teeth and hurt their back. But when we look at them and see that the motion, the problem's coming from the neck, that's altered their posture and put that stress riser in there. So I often think of exercise as a gateway drug. And what I mean by that is, if your spine and neck are not moving properly, you're going to wind up in rehab. They have a place for you, just like they do for drug addicts.
Okay.
So I think it's important to, if you're going to take that cross-country trip, to get your car tires checked, right? Make sure there's oil in the car, gas. So same thing with your spine and your health. You want to make sure everything's moving the right way before you engage in any kind of physical activity.
Sure. And to what degree, because the spine, from my own experience, the spine could be in alignment and there's still pain. And there can be tension in the muscles, the tendons, the ligaments, the fascia, and things like that, that can pull the spine out of alignment. In your approach, how do you view all of that?
Yeah, well, there's two types, right? We have a chronic and acute pain and chronic pain. And I learned this before I even went to chiropractic school, where they explain all of that. But when I was doing spine surgery, we would meet the people to do neuromonitoring before we'd go into the operation area. And what I found was that just because I can make your spine better, if I don't make some kind of cognitive behavioral change, something else is going to take the place of that pain for you. And that's where we hear about failed back syndrome and things like that. And I would talk about this with my chiropractor previously, where it could easily become a codependent relationship, going to the chiropractor expecting someone else to take your pain away.
Right.
So, you know, if you don't take care of the bad, breaking the bad habits and the lifestyle changes, nothing's going to work. So there has to be, you know, just because the nerve flow is restored, we still have to do these other things to make it all come about.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So let's go back. I think we just touched on the first, you have 3 simple steps for health, and we touched on the first one so far. That was nerves.
Nerve flow. Yes.
Nerve flow. And is there anything else you want to go in a little bit deeper or differently?
Well, I think to expand on the last question, when we're dealing with pain, if it's chronic, our body kind of reorganizes itself and it interprets things that are good as painful. So the most simplest thing could be interpreted as pain. I think in your case, you deal with a lot of knee people, correct? Correct.
Yes.
So in the athletic training room, some of our hardest cases were people had patella tracking problems, right? Okay. And it's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, like working through the exercise or dealing with the pain?
Right.
Patella, right? It's a really tricky scenario for those people. And to not sound too aggressive, sometimes you have to embrace the suck.
Sure.
Because at the end of that, there's a gift on the other side. So, right. You know, as long as the neurology is right and the spine's moving, there's ways we can get people moving through different ranges of motions to make them feel better themselves. You know, but if we just constantly brace everything around them, they don't get stronger, they get weaker. And that's a bad problem, because then all the weight dumps into the spine. And that's where the pain generators still come, if you're in alignment. But if you're weak and don't have enough structure around you to support yourself physically, you're going to still have pain. And that's where a lot of that comes from. And a lot of it comes from where people are more sedentary in life, as opposed to the foundry workers. You know, chiropractic initially was, there was a big difference between the people that sat for a living and the people that worked out on the farm. People that worked on the farm only needed to get tuned up a few times a year, where people that sit needed it once a week, because you're just not, we're conditioned to move, you know, 13 miles a day. We're not conditioned to sit 13 hours a day talking on Zoom.
Right, right. Well, there you go.
And, you know, we're chiropractic people misunderstand it. It's really 10% adjusting and 90% rehab. And a lot of the work was done on sanitarium and mental health. And what we know is, motion to the spine is lotion, but motion also drives cognition. So when we do extension-based exercises with our legs, it wakes up the front part of your brain that helps with your reasoning, your frontal cortex, right? But when that front part of your brain is weak, we lose our communication skills and we get in our temporal lobe and we get angry. We have road rage, the pain generators, the amygdala, all the negativity, all that runs our life. So not only is the adjustment wake up that part, but if we can do the right rehab and get you moving in extension-based activities, just as simple as walking, that'll help reorganize how you perceive the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a ton of truth there. How do you gauge with that embrace the suck concept with the knee tracking or the patella tracking issue? Where is the path between it's too much pain, I need to let it rest, and you need to get off your butt and do something? Like where is that space? How do you, when you work with patients, when you work with clients, where is that sweet spot for you?
Yeah. It all really comes out in the case history, you know, having a detailed case history, because it's usually not as simple as one thing. You know, a lot of people have had an injury that maybe wasn't rehabbed right. Then they're partaking in activities that aggravated said problem. So they're coming in with a multitude of other things, and we have to be able to identify that and put them in an order and say, okay, what can we chip away that's going to the least invasive thing for the biggest return? And then, so we try to get that, to get the inflammation down, try to get the spine to move a little better, take some of the pressure off, get the nerve flow restored first and foremost, and then make things simple, you know, simple as some simple exercises or maybe some deep tissue massage to get the dysfunctional fascia moving in the area where it is. And then I call it baby steps, one by one, because if we do too much, I think it's in our human nature to want to help people, right? And one of the biggest lessons I learned in athletic training school, and I'm so thankful for it, they're like, just do one or two things. Because if you throw the book at them and do 10 things the first day and they come back worse, you don't know what made it worse.
Right.
But if you just did one or two things and they come back 50% better, that's a really good thing. You know, so every time we do something, we're too aggressive with somebody and they show up worse the next day, it sets them back 2 days. Because they have to recover from that. And then we have to start from ground zero.
Right.
So, you know, if we just keep it simple and do one or two things and see, and then, hey, that didn't work, but let's try this way, you know, I think that's a much better approach to get the results we want and help people more efficiently.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And is there any like pain scale that you would have your patients work with? Like if it gets above a certain on a scale from 1 to 10, what would be too much? It's like, okay, we got to stop this.
Well, we don't really focus on pain, as you know, contradictory as that is, you know, we're not focused too much on their pain. You know, we're not blasting people that are in pain, but it's not something that we focus on. We want to look at other markers that we do in our exam to see improvement in the neurology. So a lot of what we do here in the office, we use infrared analysis. So it lets us see how much stress the nervous system under, because when you hurt your back, right, it's like, ah,
you're right.
All the blood shunts out to your extremities, your heart rate goes up.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And then you don't even know you're hurt until your body starts to relax.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you realize you've got a problem when all those hormones and adrenaline and everything calm down. So we see the same thing in people who have an injury, that fight or flight sympathetic dominance. And that's what makes it harder to work with athletes, because a lot of them come in with sympathetic dominance because that's where they're operating from. You know, they're never getting into their rest and digest mode enough. And that's where you hear a lot of athletes having heart attacks and things at age 50, because we do a great job of getting people through pain and getting them conditioned for the next game. But we do a terrible job about bringing them back down into integrating into normal life and what that would look like. So what we get celebrated for on the field for is what kills us early in life, right? I know that's pretty drastic, but it's very true. So we want to see that balance come back. And that kind of gives a good indicator for pushing someone too hard or not enough in that type of situation.
Mm-hmm. And is that covering your point too, on those three simple steps for health, exercise component?
No, I think exercise takes on, and you know, we have corrective exercises, obviously, but my system doesn't work if people don't take an active part in their life, right? We right. want to avoid that codependency. And you look at what, you know, if I hear one more thing about hormone balance, I'm probably going to get sick in my mouth. And it's not for people that have it. I'm not against them, but this, we have a problem, right? And what's a symptom of hormone imbalance? It's diabetes, right? It's a metabolic syndrome that our hormones aren't working right.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about the benefits of exercise, what are we asking ourselves to do? I'm asking my muscle to grow, right? Every time.
Right.
So when I do that, I need those hormones. I need the steroid hormones. I need the insulin. I need all these things to help the muscle grow, and it helps regulate ourselves better. So, you know, when we think of exercise, unfortunately, most people look at cardio. You know, we get the cardio bunnies out there that, you know, you think about what's my most bang for the buck, right? If I do cardio, that's the most caloric expenditure. Mm-hmm. But if you think about our nature as hunter and gathering people, and they're out there hunting buffaloes for 13 miles a day, they would technically be burning 8,000 calories. And that's not sustainable, right? But what does our body do? It tries to be more efficient at all times. So it's always going to go to efficiency mode. And they were, the difference of a hunter and gatherer and a couch potato, calorie expenditure is the same. They burn about 1,000 calories, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what we know with physical exercise, because you're changing the stimulus, your body's going to always have that metabolic demand for it. You're always changing up the stimulus. So, you know, any good program would have, you know, physical exercise, cardio, mobility, but if you could pick one, and the average person is not going to be a bodybuilder. They don't have the genetics. Like, how many 7 feet people tall in your life have you met? And
not, you know, too many.
How many dwarfs have you met? Right. So in that 80% of the bell curve is the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people have a time crunch in the modern world. It hasn't made our life easier, right? It's made it more compact.
Right.
And if you can only have 2 or 3 days a week at 45 minutes to do something, physical exercise is going to get you the best bang for your buck, because you're going to increase your metabolic demand. Mm-hmm. You're going to increase your muscle mass. And we know that fat's your number one energy source at rest. So you're going to grow muscle and lose fat at the same time and be super healthy for it.
And what does exercise look like to you? Like, what does that entail?
Well, definitely weight bearing. You know, I'm a big fan of weight bearing. I think it's really good for our bones, the stress on the bones. There's you know, so much research out there even now for people with osteoporosis. There's devices out there to help them get that resistance on the bone remodel. Because, you know, what people don't realize, I was talking to my wife, Heather, last night, you know, I've made some changes in my own health throughout. I've done different practices, but now I'm back into powerlifting. It took me a couple of years to get to lifting some serious weight. And it wasn't that I was weak. Your spine just has to get stronger, and not the bones have to get stronger. Each time you work, you're getting your fracture in your spine and it has to heal, and then it becomes back more rigid and allows you to hold more weight. So, you know, I'm big on building a firm base, you know, in your glutes and your paraspinal muscles and your spinal erectors and your rhomboids and everything. So posterior chain is probably where everybody could use some more. You know, we live in this sagittal world. We go forward. So coronal plane, side to side stuff is great for your neurology. It's good for the side body, for extension, like side bending motion. But posterior chain, I've never met anyone that has a too strong of a posterior chain walking around. And that's where injuries happen, right? We have sympathetic dominance. We're in a flexed forward posture. And then we pull a muscle because we're too tight, right? We're too tight. And then when we get the neurology to set that we could actually be in extension, and we strengthen an extension, not only does it make you smarter, but it makes you stronger.
Right. Yeah, I see that being very much the case with people who have a frozen shoulder. The tension is forward and the shoulder and the chest and the trap, and it's all like this, and they can't engage their scapula in the back that can pull it back and down.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought up the shoulder, because I know you're in the knee, but I had a shoulder injury in wrestling as a kid. I really thought that was my downfall, was the stress of that injury, until I learned more about what was going on in the upper cervical, putting pressure on my respiratory centers. But for all the years I sat at lectures as an athletic trainer, everyone standing up there, like, frozen shoulder, don't know. You know, here's what we do. We put them under anesthesia, manipulate. Some people get better, some people don't. And ironically, there's a cure for it. And a chiropractor mentor of mine, a fellow wrestler from New Jersey, figured it out. There's a nerve that comes out of the back of your head that elevates your shoulder.
Oh.
You can adjust the head in a very specific way, and the arm starts moving because that cranial nerve pressure is off and the arm automatically goes up. And I've got hundreds of cases of it. People walk in here, don't even know that they have it. And we get that fixed for them. And, you know, it's not so much you want to talk about pain. You know, they're walking around like, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
But it's not so much the pain, it's the life effect, because they can't wash their back. They can't pick up their kid. You know, they lose their job because of it. They lose relationships. It's a real problem. And I'm just so grateful to have someone that figured that out and were able to help people with that and get that motion restored. But you're totally right, because that it's in the frontal part of your brain, makes you go flex forward.
Yeah.
And if you exercise there all the time, it's a terrible place, right? And
that's
everything, that shoulder compartment is all compressed, the bicep tendon, the supraspinatus, it's everything's hangry in there.
Yeah, very much.
And you're getting stronger, you're creating more stress, and then you pop something. So that's a lot of the things for people have been there, right? So when we can get that adjusted and then to get extension and do a little soft tissue work, once everything's down, their whole life changes. You know, in a year they have a new job, they're happy, they're doing the things that they like to do, you know, and that's where the real reward comes, to help people like that.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Pain Education Corner. If you have a special talent or skill to relieve pain and you'd like to become a guest on our show, visit us at thecamellafoundation.org/interview. Help us spread the word on eliminating pain and suffering in the world. That's thecamellafoundation.org/interview. Have you... in your own experiences, probably a little bit off topic, but like I was saying, this is like, I get to hang out with cool people that like talking, they geeking out over the body. Have you had any connection with the psoas, where it attaches a T12 with the restriction shoulder?
Not so much the shoulder, because what we see is the problem in the anterior chain is from T6 up. And then from T7 down is posterior chain. So most of the things you see in psoas is more related to the hip, hip flexion, extension, rotation, things like that.
Okay.
But there can be compensatory things, you know, because nothing exists in a vacuum.
Right.
You know? So when people's posture is off and their head is off to the right, you know, the opposite side is going to have a problem as well. So we often do find some restrictions in there. Yeah, but psoas stuff is more probably related to the lumbar spine for what I see mostly with lower extremity type issues. But yeah, it doesn't mean that they don't have a like a rotation in their fascia, mm-hmm. so to say. You know, when we observe them walking and do some of our neural tests, we'll see that. But a lot of it resolves when we get the neck moving better. Because it's mm-hmm. They call it the oculopelvic reflex. So if mm-hmm. you ever see people walk around with their head forward?
Yes.
Right? So you can't walk with your head down, right? So you have to extend out to see because your vision is your number one sense during the day because you can't, you won't be able to walk looking down.
Right.
And their pelvis.
Be parallel with the horizon.
Their leg, you have to flex their pelvis underneath of them. So mm-hmm. it's a reflexive action coming from the neck.
Gotcha.
You're talking about with the psoas contraction coming like that. So the majority of the time I see is what I see in the pelvis misalignment is a reflex from the neck. We adjust the neck, the reflex resets, and things calm down. They may need like a little bit of care down there, but it's flawed thinking just to focus on that area when the reflex is coming from the neck.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I see what you're saying. I'm tracking.
It's a wild concept. You know, people come in here with back pain. They're like, "Why are you touching my neck?" I'm like, "Trust me, watch."
Yeah.
And then they wake up the next day like, "Oh, things are much better." And then that allows them, now that they have more extension, they're able mm-hmm. to get deeper to where it's tight. Mm-hmm. The areas in the psoas and things, or you know, in their yoga practice or mobility practice where they've always been tight, or the power lifters I treat, it's the shoulder. They can't get that extra thing. But when this is tight, the ribs get all jacked up, right?
Yep.
So you restore the rib motion. You know, when people come in, we check their ribs. I'm checking for vagal tone because I want to see the breathing, because it's if you don't get your ribs moving enough, it's like you're hyperventilating all day. And we wonder when we all have anxiety, but it's because we're in this flexed posture.
Yeah, the rib.
And we're breathing twice as much as we need to. So we couldn't relax if we wanted to. And then we get that, the ribs unlocked, then the air gets in there and the heart rate starts coming down, the pulse oxygen goes up, and the resting heart rate changes.
No, that's great. And for the listeners, those who are watching, every time you take a breath, your rib cage expands and it contracts. So when you free that up, that allows the lungs underneath the rib cage to move more freely.
And then when that's all restricted in there, we have problems with acid reflux, GERD. It goes far to get a hiatal hernia, which is a hole in your diaphragm. Your diaphragm's a muscle, right? So the other condition we see a lot here in the clinic is sleep apnea. So something's fatal. You know, I lost a dear friend of mine I went to grammar school with last year to sleep apnea, and I wish I could have helped him, but I didn't. I didn't know he was having problems. You know, it's another silent killer that's out there. So in our exam, when people lose the curve in their neck, not only does it cause muscle tension and pain, but it's also lack of airflow, right? Because it's pinching off the airflow. So we kind of look for that for people to help them with that situation. And then we sometimes have to, as crazy as it believes, I encourage people to sleep on their stomachs. Most people think you need to sleep on your back, but as humans, we're designed to sleep on our belly. That's why our spine has ridges on the back, right? So it kind of protects us. If we lay on our belly, we're all open. But the thing that it really does, it puts pressure on the diaphragm. That's why we call it tummy time for babies, right? When moms bring their young kids in that had a birth injury like mine, but I catch it right off the bat instead of having to go through this athletic cascade of putting dysfunction on top of dysfunction and getting super sick and losing your life dreams. I see them a week after birth and said that, but then we have them on tummy time. But the tummy time puts the pressure on the belly, so the diaphragm gets stronger.
Okay.
Yep. And it also induces you to go to rest and digest mode. To give or take a nap and need to have something on your stomach, like a blanket or a pillow.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's comforting.
Yes.
So that's what happens when we sleep on our stomach. And when we turn our head, it opens up the cervical curve. So it actually opens up the airway better. People think it restricts it, but the way the motion works, it actually opens it up.
Well, it would be, I would imagine the difficulty that they're having is because of all the tension in the shoulders and the upper back that it doesn't allow them to turn their head to one side.
Correct. So that's, we have to get the motion. And some people come, I last 2 minutes. I'm like, that's fine. I just want you to start training yourself to get in there. And once you get a curve in your neck and everything's moving, you can sleep in any position you want. We're really designed to toss and turn about 13 times a night. That's where when we sleep on our back without a curve in our neck on a pillow with a curve, it's almost like an ankle brace. It's like wearing an ankle brace 24/7 or a knee brace. It's not good for you. You know, when you have the curve and the spine's moving, you can, you know, it's like the reward is you could do anything you want with sleep.
Nice. Okay. That's great. I love it. Okay. Client walks in, limps in, shuffles in to come see you. What happens? What happens for him?
You are going to have a life-changing experience. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I really feel, you know, going through all the stuff I did in the medical world, you kind of get treated as a number. And I don't think any doctor is there to hurt anybody or mistreat people, but it's just that system doesn't allow for that human connection. So we want to sit down and really understand the problem. I want to listen and hear what's going on. And most people have a misconception. They think the symptom is the problem. And it's really not, because when I talk to them, the day or the year before that symptom came, what I find in my exam was already there. It already was pre-existing. And it's more about that life effect, like we talked with the frozen shoulder, not being able to pick up your kid, not being able to go to the gym to work on your posterior chain or whatever it is that you value. And when we have that type of injury, we stop being who we are and we start accepting less. It's like this downward slope that occurs. And my shtick on just getting people out of pain, I think that's very energy neutral. You know, I'm just bringing you back to where you were. But what about going up over here? You know, so we really work on that life effect, but then we want to hear about their objectives. Like, what do you want to get out of this experience? And not only, you know, Captain Obvious is to get you out of pain, but we also want to get you back to doing what it is you love to do or more of it. And then, you know, we work really hard to bridge that gap from healthcare to personal development. So I asked them, you know, in a year from now, if we were to turn around and you knock this goal out of the park, whether it's something personal, professional, or relationship, what does that look like? And you'd be surprised some of the answers I get. You know, it's like, hey, I want to get married. I want to start a business, or I want to do this or that. And they never could get over this one obstacle, right? But as soon as we start moving things around, and this practice is very provocative. You know, walking through my door, you have to be very brave. Number one, you have to admit that you have a problem. But then two, you have to take action on it, because everyone else here is getting healthy. And if you're not taking an active part in it, you're going to fail out of it. And that's okay, because I'm not here to push people. Everyone has to learn on their own about how they want to attack something. But, you know, that's the best part of my job, is I get to see people be the hero of their life. And these life changes occur fast. 6 months, 3 months, you know, new job, new business. It's pretty wild. So once we get to listen to that problem, we want to be able to see the problem. So we do a very intensive corrective structural correction spine exam. So we have some amazing technology here in the office. We do a structural correction motion image. So I actually see the spine moving live in motion. Remember the game Jenga, Bill, where everything's out of place?
Oh, yeah.
And they're all out, and but there's that one in there holding it, right? And
right.
In people's cases, it's two or three problems, but it allows me to see the problem. They get to see it and precisely work with that problem right there.
So when they're this technology that you have and they're moving, what are they moving? Like
their neck, they're going up, the ceiling, they're looking down. And then when I look at the lumbar spine, they side bend. So we're looking at the spinal mechanics of what's going on.
And is this like an X-ray device? Is this this is just on the outside of their skin?
Yeah, it's a moving X-ray. So we call it a motion image.
Oh, okay.
Live in real time. So when we take a picture, just an X-ray, that's one thing. It's kind of like looking at an athlete at the combine and the NFL in a track suit. Like, well, he looks fast. But until we put the stress on it, we don't see how things are going to perform, right? So we actually want to see how things are moving. Because sometimes something might look wrong, but if it's working, there's really nothing wrong with it. You know, it's like that old beat up car with a beat up engine underneath of it. It's perfectly fine, you know.
Right.
So, but when we put the stress on the spine and we're able to see it, it allows us to work precisely where someone's problem is. And that allows us to get a really good effect in a short period of time. And then we also do an infrared nervous scan. So it's like I said, after I adjust them, we expect that to change. When they come in for their follow-up visits, I'm looking for reasons not to adjust them, believe it or not. Contrary to most chiropractic, especially in the insurance model where they only get paid if they do something, if your body's healing, I don't need to adjust you by hand, because if I do too much hand adjusting, it could be destructive to your body, because your body doesn't know the difference of an adjustment at the wrong time or a car wreck. Mm. And, you know, I've had all types of chiropractic care, and I don't fault anybody, but, you know, what I didn't get into earlier was for, you know, when you lose something, right, you're like, I'm going to be a good soldier and never lose that again. And so I went to the chiropractor once a week for 15 years, and I got the same adjustment with my neck twisted to the right, twisted to the left, my spine left, spine right, and I would feel better, but the pain in my shoulder, which wasn't my initial problem, would always come back. And I just figured that was life. And, you know, I would take that stim machine and I would get blisters on it, because it was a peak thing, because I just wanted to get rid of that pain. And I had understood the machine, and so did he. And, you know, we just kept working through it, but it was the same problem every week. And when I finally decided to align my life with my values and go to chiropractic school later in life, you know, my intern was a turd and didn't get me care for like 2 months. And I was really hurting. Like, I couldn't pick my neck up at the end of the day. I felt nauseous. Like, I was like, I need to go to the hospital. But finally they got in there and they took another picture, and the curve in my spine was 1 degree worse than it was 15 years ago. I was like, this is insane. I just cashed in this awesome job for something I love. Like, how is chiropractic failing me? And somebody was smart enough to take a very special picture in my upper cervical and saw that even though I had a curve in my neck from all the athletics that I did, which kept me going, my top bone, the atlas bone, was a quarter inch through my spinal cord. And when they took the picture, they're like, hey, are you all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. They're like, no, really? I'm like, no, I think I'm pretty sick. And I was playing football with that. And that's why I was always had inconsistent health, because of that injury. Where, and the crazy part about it, when you learn the neurology of breathing in the brainstem, is you've heard of SIDS before?
Yes. Kids,
babies dying. So 1 millimeter pressure on their brainstem and they die. I'm out there with, you know, a quarter inch of pressure and I'm playing football, run into people as a college athlete. So, you know, that's where our office is really focused on the specificity of the analysis, because we don't want to miss that. Because all the time I went to the chiropractor, nobody ever addressed that problem. And that was and they all helped me, and to the best of their ability from their scope of practice. So I'm not criticizing them. It's just, for me, there was something else in there beyond the pain that was the true generator of it. And my spine was moving, but there was another problem. So that's what we're really looking for people, to help identify that for them. And then, of course, we do a big thing is a posture check, because posture is a key to what's going on. We talked earlier how the eyes have to be level, otherwise you'd walk in a circle.
Right.
So that's where we see those asymmetries in a high shoulder and a turned out foot and things like that. Because if I was to correct that on someone, they'd fall over. So their brain is saying, in order for you to stay up, we have to do that. And, of course, any kind of orthopedic or neuro test from my athletic training days, we do for people to rule in, you know, any kind of tears in the knees or shoulders or any other kind of care that they might need concurrent with what we do in the office, especially when a chronic knee pain or shoulder comes in. We often find some stuff that needs to get taken care of. We work from central nervous system out. So we get that calmed down. Then we go out to the peripheral nervous system and extremities and things like that. And I used to think that extremity adjusting was a joke, you know, but from being working as an athletic trainer, you're just working around it. And now what I'm seeing, you adjust the joint and people heal like that. It's pretty wild. And then just walking is the rehab. And if they need a little more, then we refer that out to the right professionals. I'm a big fan of collaborative care. I respect other professionals, masters of their craft. My piece of my healthcare is so small, Bill.
Yeah.
But it's the most vital.
And sure.
If people get that piece right, everything they build off is a strong foundation. That's why, you know, my three things is a pyramid, you know, nerve flow, exercise, and water. You build that strong foundation, it's uncrackable. But if we build athletes and put dysfunction on dysfunction, it's just going to crack. You know, and then when we deal with the normal population, it's if mom or dad are not feeling good, it's like, if they go down, what happens? You know, all these people are dependent on them, or their companies and things like that. So I really come at it treating them like a professional athlete of their own life and get them up and running so that that doesn't happen.
Okay, let's go on to the third point. Water.
Yes, love water.
Tell us about water.
Well, I think, you know, you grew up as an athlete, right? Watching the Gatorade commercials, you know, Gatorade is thirst aid for the deep down body thirst, right?
That's marketing.
and that's what it is. We talked earlier about exercise when they sell that it factor of the Nike commercial or the Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it inhibits people from taking action. And it's also the same thing with Gatorade. It's sugar water, right?
Right.
And the craziest thing, what really got me into it personally, and I see it, people were coming into the practice and had degenerative spines with no trauma. Mm-hmm. And what I was noticing was that when we did some lab work is that their magnesium level was so low. Magnesium is so important in our body because as soon as we're under stress, that's the first thing to get depleted. But magnesium also inhibits calcium. So people that have low magnesium are coming because calcium is getting laid down like crazy in their spine. And that's what was happening, is this metabolic imbalance.
Oh, okay. Magnesium inhibits calcium. So if you have plenty of magnesium, you're going to prevent calcium building up?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So a big part of arthritis is a metabolic imbalance.
Okay. So we're looking for a right ratio of magnesium to calcium?
Yep. Correct. Yep.
So okay.
People often get adaptation wrong. They think overuse is a thing, but if you swing a hammer as a carpenter first week, you're sore, but the rest of your life, you're fine.
Right.
Right. So you're not going to build up arthritis in that, you know, but, with that mineral imbalance that goes on, and same thing, if we eat an acidic diet, this is another thing that got me into it. People are showing up with osteoporosis in their 40s and like, hey, what's going on? And I would see this in spine surgery and I was like, what's the common denominator? And they all had their 13 synthetic medications and they're all eating the same food, which is super acidic. And if your body's have to alkalize things to digest it, so it's going to take what it needs to calcium from the bone to alkalize it. So it's making you sicker.
So, okay, this is interesting because I did not know this. So an acidic diet, the body brings the calcium in to balance the acidity.
Yeah, so you could digest it.
So you could digest it. And that is the factors that contribute, or one of the factors that can contribute to osteoporosis.
Yeah, osteoporosis. And you also, where people get the fat is what it is. It's taking the fat and pushing it away from your organs because it says, hey, I can't deal with this right now. I have to put this on the external.
Okay.
It's part of my body. That's when people, when they go to an alkaline diet and start drinking what we call structured water, they do much better because now their body, the metabolic processes in the body can take place. And then they start healing better, and also helps with the joint health big time, because another part of being acidic with your body is your joints get destroyed, right? We see it with all different types of joint disease problems. So, you know, we're 70% water, just like the earth is 70% water. And it's not just, it's the quality of the water, because we have so much contamination now with our pollution, and the rain comes and hits the pollution, becomes acid rain. And then it hits the ground where we have glyphosates and everything, and then it rusts the pipes, right? And your house, the cloisters. But what do we have? Carotid artery disease, the hardening of the arteries, right? That's one of the biggest killers out there, is where the oxidation, right? It's like rusty bumper inside of our body. So when we take out the rust with structured water that has magnesium bicarbonates in it, it neutralizes the heavy metals. It heals our gut flora from all the contamination. A lot of medicines are known to deplete your body of magnesiums. So when we do that, our health changes. And my wife is astonished because we have a great filtration system at the house, and we brought our two older boys into our marriage, and then we have two younger ones. And now with the difference of the water, my daughter at 18 months has all her teeth. And you know, one day she had came down hand, foot and mouth disease, and 2 days later it was gone. And you hear about people, so this takes months to heal. So it's just amazing the difference when you test the water in different areas and you see the health of people. So that's one of the things we do for people, is test their water and make sure it's not contaminated.
And where do you go for water testing? Is that the...
I have a meter here that I use to test for total dissolved solids. There's a company here in Asheville, Mountain Water Systems, that can test your water as well. But what you really want is something that's going to restructure the water, reoxygenate it, and then put these chemicals, the bicarbonates, the minerals. If you think of water like coming down a mountaintop, you know, we have all these waterfalls here in North Carolina, right? Beautiful.
Right.
50 of them. Have you ever swam in any of them?
Yes.
It's like the Fountain of Youth, right? You get out, yep, and you're just like, whoa, something's different.
Sure.
You know, and that's what it is that water goes down the rocks in a zigzag. So it gets oxygenated as it's going back and forth, H2O, mm-hmm, right? So it's like a tetrahedron cycle that spins around. It's not flat. When water comes out of a pipe after a treatment plant, it's flat, dead, distilled, yep, water. There's no life to it. There's no oxygen. There's no life. What are people suffering from in their health? Hypoxia, right? From not getting enough oxygen in their, mm-hmm, but they need the oxygen in your water to help you. Mm-hmm. And then when it goes over those rocks, it gets mineralized.
Yep.
So we miss that with treatments. And I think there's over 200 chemicals that pass through water treatment facilities. You know, here at Asheville, the water is better than the rest of the country, but it's still contaminated. And when we, sure, change that, it's just a pivotal part to our health, to, yeah, meet our life goals. Do you ever, when you're thirsty, you ever drink a lot of water, but you just still feel thirsty?
Yes.
Yeah, so that water is flat, the pH of it is low, the structure is bad. And when you, mm-hmm, drink structured water with a high pH and good bicarbonate minerals in it, your body absorbs it anyway. It's like gummy berry juice. You're like,
yeah,
and you power, yeah, right up.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. Awesome. So we got your three simple steps for health, which is going to work for if somebody's struggling with pain. We got the nerves, we got the exercise, we got the water. Is there anything else you'd like to bring to the conversation today? Anything else that I hadn't covered that's kind of sticking out in your mind that we'd like to dig into?
I really enjoyed the conversation. I think the one thing I do want to add is with the magnesium, with people in pain, it really helps. It helps you get to sleep. It helps with the muscle spasms.
Mm-hmm.
It's a key component because your body's healing. It's going to need a lot of it. Yeah. And that's something to really make sure that they focus on. And just in closing here, you know, I think these are some really important topics. I love what you're doing here. I think we touched on everything. And I just want to be a resource for people. You know, if and when they decide chiropractic care is for them, or if they know someone that has a condition that we can help with, or just sitting at a waterfall and the health topic, right, topic of health comes up, I want them to think of you and I, Bill, and yep, how we can help. And, you know, the one thing that I'm not going to do, there's no special offer. You know, I'm not, you don't sign up today to get care for,
yeah,
whatever, right, money. You know, you're not going to die tomorrow.
Right.
You know, but we do in our practice that I'm really proud of is our consultations are always complimentary. Just, mm-hmm, a conversation like you and I are talking here. There's no commitment. So we're always willing to talk to people, whether it be in person or online. We're always happy to do that for you. And thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. And what we'll do, we'll get it set up where if someone wants to reach out to you as a resource, we'll have a link set up where they can get in touch with you directly.
Beautiful. Love it. Keep up the good work.
Well, thank you, Dr. Chris. Really appreciate your time. I enjoyed our conversation. I think it was fantastic. You brought some wonderful stuff to the conversation. Any other closing remarks right before I wrap this up?
Yeah, I do. I really want to encourage people to not wait. You know, mm-hmm, I think there's three reasons we're in a health crisis. And number one is the wrong definition of health. And we touched on it earlier. We're not designed to be healthy. We're designed to heal. Mm-hmm. And if we can't heal, we'll definitely not be healthy. People also, there's no accountability. You know, we talked on this earlier as being a codependent relationship with your therapist.
Right.
So you need to take an active part in your life. And the last one is procrastination, because the lines of disease are coming. You know, as we progress and get more technology, the lifestyle diseases of diabetes, cancer, and heart rate, they keep going, you, mm-hmm, know, and if you take action now, we may be able to help you. But if you wait a year, it may take longer. It may not be able to correct something. So ignoring your way out of a problem, even though you can do it, you know, like playing hurt, right? Running on the hurt ankle may not be the best thing for you, because you're going to hit the wall, and we don't want to see people do that.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Well, once again, thank you, Dr. Chris. And this is Bill Paravano, the knee pain guru, coming to you on behalf of the Pain Education Podcast and the Camella Foundation, wishing you a wonderful day, and we will see you on the next one. Thank you for tuning into this week's segment of the Pain Education Corner. Join us next week for another conversation on natural healing methods to eliminate pain. To learn more about the work we do at the Camella Foundation, please visit our website at the Camella, CommellaFoundation.org.